everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda, although I am considering a name change because I think this is the third call to a professional athlete that I've had in the last 2 weeks, which has actually been in the late afternoon. So I'm thinking we might have to change it to welcome back to afternoon wines or afternoon drinks with Belinda. Today I have a gorgeous young pro triathlete, and I say young because he's only 31 years old, and in my eyes that is still very young. Welcome to the call, Josh Amberger.
Thanks, BG. Yeah, I'll take the label of young any day. Definitely.
Oh, it's funny. I think all the pro athletes these days are young in my eyes. I'm turning 50 at the end of this year, which is honestly it puts hairs on my neck when I say it. So yeah, 31, and I think you've only recently turned 31 back in April. Is that right?
Yeah, April 12. Mark it down.
Not so long ago.
It's actually funny because for quite a long time, myself and a few of the other Aussies and Kiwis, when we first started racing 70.3 back in the 2011-2012, we called ourselves the young bloods because we were always taking on all the old dogs. Yeah, all the old, like Crowy and Macca and all these fossils, right? And they just wouldn't go away.
They're still not going away.
Go away and let us take a turn, please. And so, yeah, we were the young bloods, and I don't know, kind of still feel like a bit of a young blood, so that's good.
No, you're definitely still a young blood. I don't think we, in the long distance triathlon, you're not considered old till you're at least into your 40s. So you've got several years left to go yet before we start calling you one of the old fossils like we call Crowy and Cam Brown, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, listen, Josh, one thing before we start, because I feel like an idiot. Your last name, can you pronounce it for me the way it is supposed to be pronounced?
Oh, well, I don't care, to be honest. Like, it's no biggie for me. So my parents raised me saying Amberger. But that's actually, I mean, being a German name, that's actually Saxonized, and that's incorrect. So it's like the German, you'd say it, Amberger. Even once I was boarding an aircraft, late last year, and the hostess actually spoke to me in German. And pronounced my name as it would be in German. So I had to, I think she actually was German. It was an Air New Zealand flight, and she was feeling maybe a bit homesick and wanted to talk German to someone. And I'm sorry that I couldn't give her that luxury.
You couldn't give her a guten Tag or Vigets?
Well, no, because then that would insinuate that I'm not German.
And you don't want that. Actually, you know what? I've done that before many times in Germany. Thought I'd be a smart ass and speak a little bit of German. And then, of course, they start rattling it off. And I'm like, oh, sorry. No, yeah. Understand. And then you feel like an idiot.
A dumb unilingual Aussie.
Yeah, no, it's not good. Okay, so that's good. So Josh Amberger, I like that too anyway. So good to know that's German blood there. That was going to be my next question. I wasn't sure. I mean, obviously Amberger sounds very German, but I wasn't sure. And that's obviously on your father's side?
Yeah, so my mother's side, she was born in New Zealand to two Dutch parents. So I also have Dutch heritage.
Dutch heritage as well.
So I've got a Dutch passport, and I guess I'm technically a bit of a Kiwi too, even though I was born in Australia. So most of our family is between New Zealand and the Netherlands, so we don't really have the German connection anymore. But definitely a lot of European blood in my family.
Oh wow, I did not know that you had family in the Netherlands. That's really interesting. We're going to have to get you over to do Challenge Almere one day then.
Yeah, maybe cool. ITU long distance if it's still on at some point.
Watch this space, Josh. Watch this space. It will be happening. We just not 100% sure when.
Yeah.
But now you've been a pro athlete for over 10 years now, around 10 years. You've got a stack of half-distance victories to your name. You've also got a full-distance win, so an Ironman win, which is pretty impressive. Would you say that you are now a full-distance athlete, or you still prefer the half-distance?
I prefer just the label of triathlete because I love racing every distance. I'm not exclusive to any one distance. In fact, some days I hate Ironman and love Olympic distance, and some days I race an Olympic distance, get smashed, and I hate Olympic distance, and then I'll be good at 70.3 for a bit and then Ironman for a bit. And so I love triathlon, any distance. I've raced Super League, sprint distance, Olympics. So there was a point last year where I did Escape from Alcatraz and was third, and then I did Quarter Lane 70.3 the next weekend, and then I'm in Victoria in Europe the next weekend. So I did Olympic half and full within 3 or 4 weeks, and podium at them all. So I love triathlon, and no matter what distance, I'll always try and find races that suit me. I'm obviously not going to line up for an ITU event, but races like Escape from Alcatraz and Noosa Triathlon at Olympics still suit me as much as some Ironmans.
You know, it's pretty impressive though, Josh, particularly in this age where triathlon is, you know, I know there are some athletes that can still do well over all distances, but it's getting harder and harder to do so because everyone has their specific distance that they're really good at. But you are one of the dying breed, to be honest, that is able to be super competitive over all three, non-drafting Olympic, half distance and full distance. And you really are. I mean, that's a talent in itself, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful that my parents got me swimming from a young age. So I think no matter what distance or format I do, I can keep myself in the game from the start. Whereas, you know, if someone's new to swimming but is a great Ironman athlete, let's say like a Lionel Sanders, he's never going to be able to compete on a shorter distance level. I mean, there's some amazing athletes, much more talented than me, like, say, Gomez, and obviously, you know, your Ali Brownleys and Fredinos and stuff that absolutely smash all three. And then I think there's a lot of guys that race ITU now. So I race Martin Van Riel, a Belgian athlete. I raced him in Xiamen 70.3 late last year, and he beat me, which wasn't surprising. But guys like him, he'll be another multi distance dude. I foresee he's already starting to play with halves, but yeah, some more guys that'll come out of the woodwork across all distances for sure.
Yeah, I agree. We see it every year, and obviously we all thought we'd start to see it towards the end of this year after the Olympic Games, but now that they have been obviously postponed to next year, it might be a little bit longer before we see, you know, a lot of those short course athletes move across permanently to the half distance.
Yeah, that's closer than you'd think for me, actually, sharing the household with my fiance Ashley Gentle. So
yeah, I can imagine.
I guess the plan was for her to race the Olympics this year, and I mean, whether or not she hung up the ITU cap, that's entirely up to her. But she'd already qualified for the 70.3 Worlds, and she was going to do both, obviously, 70.3 Worlds being after the Olympics. So it kind of segued perfectly, and you know, she could have chosen to take that career path. But we'll all have to wait another year for that, at least.
Yeah, true. It's 2020 is going to be known as the waiting game, let's be honest. I think it's been a crazy year for everyone, and one that I don't think any of us could have anticipated. And speaking of this year, normally around this time, I mean, obviously we are heading into winter. We're not quite there yet. And I say winter fairly casually because, you know, the winter in Queensland is not a true winter per se. But usually you would be heading either, I'd say, to the US. You normally go off to the US around this time. Was it going to be a little different this year, though, Josh, because you were signed up to do Challenge Roth in Germany in July for the first time ever. So was the plan still to head to the US, to Oregon, or were you actually planning to head over to Europe?
Yes, yeah, so I was trying to, this year the plan was to kind of juggle Ashley getting ready for the Olympics,
right, yep.
But also kind of my own career ambitions. So I was going to go to her final selection race in Yokohama in Japan, which was this weekend or last weekend,
right?
Based on original scheduling. And mm-hmm. and then we were going to head over to the US from there. And I was actually fortunate that she gave me a leave card to duck over to Germany for the weekend to race Challenge Roth.
Unreal.
Yeah, because she obviously understands the scale and that event and how prestigious it is. But apart from doing Roth, I was pretty much just going to be there to help race. Ash day to day, and oh, we work together kind of as athlete and coach as well. So yeah, I couldn't realistically take too much time away from her, but she wanted to do her main prep for the Olympics in the 2 months prior in the US. So yeah, definitely
right.
Yep. Around, yeah, we should be in the US by now, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, plans have changed, and once they did cancel Roth, that also changed as well. Are you now planning to stay in Brisbane for the foreseeable future? Is that the plan to actually have a winter? Because when's the last time you actually had a true Aussie winter for its entirety? I mean, obviously. I mean, I feel a bit stupid saying this. I know my friends in Europe give me shit all the time when I say, oh, I've got to stay home for the whole of winter. And they're like, please, Belinda, come on.
I think it was probably not since 2007, my first year out of high school, to be honest.
Wow.
But, you know, I was racing the ITU circuit from when I was 16 internationally. So, yeah, I was still studying at university when I left high school, but we were always still between, say, Asia. 1 year we did a little summer in Canada and then bits in Europe. So, yeah, I haven't spent the winter months at home in its entirety since, yeah, literally high school or the first year out of it.
Crazy. And do you plan to stay in Brizzy, or will you, once the borders open up, which is not, you know, in the too far away, are you just going to stay in Brisbane, or will you look to have like a little training camp somewhere else in Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got my own plans in my head, but
yep.
doesn't necessarily align with what Ash.
What's going to happen? Yeah, okay,
Because we're home in winter, I kind of want to take advantage of that and head down to the Alps for 1 year. I know, like, we don't have amazing snow like Europe and the US, but we have something, and we've actually had a fantastic snowstorm to start the winter down south.
Right.
So I'd love to go down to the snow for a week, to be honest. So, but Ash has got no interest in that.
No. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Well, it's not bad though. I mean, I remember obviously when I long time ago now, but when I was in university, we used to go to skiing every winter, and I loved it. And then once I decided that professional athlete was what I was going to be, I have not skied since. And it's quite depressing when I look back at that now, because it's actually a lot of fun. So I can respect your idea to go down. It's not a bad idea, to be honest.
Yeah, I grew up skiing, obviously very intermittently in New Zealand when I went back to see family in winter, and actually hit the slopes in December in Oregon when I went back for a holiday. And Ashley, I think she was actually keen to try it until I came home with a broken rib in December.
Yeah, any problem with it all, yes.
Yeah, so fortunately it was only a rib, and, you know, takes a while to heal, but it healed. But, yeah, you know, to be honest, we'll probably stay in Brisbane to reduce travel. I mean, it's the smartest thing. We're still new in a house here. We're enjoying living together for the first time in our long relationship. And to be honest, we kind of got like a fantastic little training bubble here in like northwest Brisbane. So we have everything we need. We kind of found some little secret swimming spots too. So we can do all the training that we need even in this lockdown period.
I have to admit, I remember when you were building your house, which you only recently moved into around 18 months ago. It is an absolutely magnificent house. I'm quite jealous. I was following along, and even now to this day, I know you've been doing quite a bit of work in the garden in your backyard, and it is an absolutely beautiful block of land. So if I was you, I'd be staying put too. So I can completely understand you, both of you staying there. And interesting, you only recently got engaged to Ash, didn't you? So this is a real test for you both to see if you can actually last the distance.
Yeah, well, I fortunately probably just scraped in and passing the engagement test after 10 years together. I think the tipping point was I asked Tony, Ashley's dad, for his blessing a year ago, and kind of never really followed up on it because we started getting busy with the season and travel, and Ash was away, and
finding the right time, the right place.
Okay. Yeah, he called me up at the start of this year and asked what was going on and if everything was okay, and I was kind of like,
yeah, it's good.
I had to assure him, yeah, not like it's all fine, everything's good. And so at that point, I finally decided to do something about it and get Ashley a nice ring. And I proposed to her the day I picked up the ring. So,
No mucking around then. Well, you're mucking around for a year, but then once it was ready to go, you got to it, which is good to see.
I think Ash would say I was mucking around for a lot longer. But my proposition was always that I was not going to propose until we lived together. So I wanted to get the house done and move in, and then let all that happen.
And of course, you live in Brisbane now. Whereabouts? Not, you don't have to give me the exact address, but whereabouts in Brisbane? Because you are on quite a big block of land. I think you said, how big was the block of land? 12.
Yeah, so we're on 1250 square.
Wow, massive.
So pretty big for a suburban block, but we're in northwest Brisbane. So I believe you've probably ridden through Sanford Valley.
I have, yeah.
So kind of near there. It's just really on the outskirts of Brisbane. So we've got just a great little pocket of fantastic riding with lots of running trails and convenient pool options. And it's just a really good spot to train.
And not a lot of traffic. I mean, you're out of the craziness of Brisbane, but still close enough to go in there if you need it. So it's perfect.
Yeah.
And look, talking about swimming holes, obviously you have got some reservoirs that you swim in. I've seen some sneaky little pictures. But when the pools are technically supposed to be opening from tomorrow, although, you know, the crazy rules that they've set in place of only 10 people being allowed at a time, I know that the Sunshine Coast Council and Noosa Council have both decided to remain closed. So we only got the news today that our Noosa Aquatic Centre will not be opening for at least another 4 weeks, which made a lot of people quite upset, although we are lucky here, as you would know, with Noosa Main Beach. We've still got beautiful beach to swim in. It's still 23 degrees. But what's happening down Brizzy Way as far as local council pools are going?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't kept up with it as much as, say, Ash. I mean, Ash is... she's super keen to keep up with the news. And
why is it, Josh? You know, it's exactly the same here. Everyone that's technically what I would call a non-swimmer, as in they didn't swim as children, are desperate to get back in the pool. All the swimmers I know, Luke McKenzie hasn't touched water since the pool's closed. All these swimmers are like, yeah, whatever, we can give it another week or two. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably in my household it's more like a male and female thing, maybe. She's maybe a little bit more
obsessive compulsive with this.
Yeah, maybe that, and you know, she probably prefers the more scheduled training to me. But I don't know. Being a swimmer, of course, it's, I don't know, you can just pick it up easier. I mean, if I took a week out of the water, of course, when I get back in, I'm going to feel horrible. But I can.
You'll get it back.
We'll get it done, yeah.
Unlike myself, whereas if I have a week out, it takes me a month to get back. So it's pretty ugly. It's not a nice looking thing. So you've only recently finished your house. Fantastic. I know you guys have been doing quite a lot of work around the place, final bits like the garden, etc., during ISO. So you have actually been very active, which has been awesome to see. What I love about you, and I'm going to ask you, I want to know where this came from, is your love of flora and fauna, and it's obvious. Your knowledge of Australian fauna in particular, it's bloody impressive. Where did this come from? When did it start?
You know, it's hard to put a date on it, really, but being a young Australian travelling the world, which, you know, is quite typical Aussies and Kiwis getting out and seeing the world, you know, you'll literally find them everywhere. There's some expressions overseas like Jaffa, which means like just another effing Australian. I know Canadians say that quite a lot. But, you know, I've always been travelling since I was young, and one of the best parts always about coming home from overseas, particularly, you know, from Europe and America, was getting back and seeing, you know, the Aussie bush, and just like the really different landscape we have here and different flora and fauna. I can't recall off the top of my head, but that was kind of like the first thoughts that went back when with the first fleet when James Cook discovered Australia, was just like the different just everything was so different. And I really just always felt an affinity with the bush and the trees and, you know, the big eucalypts and our native flowers like the banksias and grevilleas and acacias and stuff. And like everything about the bush, like the smell, you know, the sounds, the birds, insects, animals, and then of course, like looking at the trees, every tree is so different, and it was fascinating to me to like look at them, admire the different aspects, the colors, the barks, the saps, the smells. And it actually didn't really start to get serious until we bought our block of land. It was a few years ago, so we had the block well over a year before we started building on it. And we've got these three really big gum trees on our block. So that was part of the attraction for buying it.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know what they were. So it literally, from wanting to know what three trees were on our block of land, it kind of like escalated.
Escalated from there, yeah.
So I started buying, you know, some textbooks and just kind of casually reading them. And every time I go bike riding, We ride through a lot of bush here, whether it's, you know, road cycling. We've got bike paths through bushy sections, and I do a lot of gravel riding and trail running and stuff. So, yeah, it was every time I went out training, it was kind of like this this like exploration of all the trees and stuff around me. And then, of course, our big block of land, I wanted to plant it out. And like going to nurseries, native nurseries and stuff to find all the trees
the right and wanted
to put in. That was like, yeah, that was kind of, yeah, that's when it really started to get out of hand. So,
well, out of hand, but it's brilliant. I love it. And how old do you think those gum trees are on your property?
Oh, they could, you know, to be honest, they could be some of them like 150, 200 years old. And then, of course, when you start to put, like, nature into perspective like that, and you realize kind of, I don't know, how insignificant.
Exactly. We are. Yeah. Exactly.
It just makes it all that special.
Yeah, totally agree.
Just how unique and special these trees are.
Definitely is. I couldn't agree with you more. You keep it coming, because I actually get a little lesson every time you go for a ride and you actually talk about all the different trees. I must admit, I have a severe problem trying to pronounce the official language of the trees at times. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm not even going to try with that. It's too difficult.
that's part of like the, I know, one of the attractions for me is, yeah, trying to actually pronounce them and then remember them. And then
remember them for later. Exactly.
Oh yeah, you pat yourself on the back when you're like, yeah, damn, I
nailed that. I love it. Now, Josh, obviously today the whole professional triathlon and age group triathlon world woke up today to the official announcement of the cancellation of the 70.3 Worlds in Taupo and obviously World Champs in Kona 2020 being cancelled. Initial thoughts? I mean, I'm not sure if you knew. I mean, I think we all had a gut feeling it was going to happen. Mm. But it's a difference from us anticipating it happening and then it actually the official announcement being made. Your initial thoughts on it?
Yeah, you know, of course, I knew in the back of my mind that it was a long shot. And it's not something that I'm desperate to do. You know, I wasn't thinking, God, I hope Kona's on this year or God, I hope Taupo's on. I mean, I want to race both events, but it's also not something that I'm like dying to do.
Dying to do. Yeah.
If the climate of the world is like, you know,
is
the way it is now. And Kona's actually, I had a different feeling about it this year anyway. I started the year not really interested in pursuing a start there this year. I've done it 3 years in a row now and gotten my ass kicked every time really. So
You're not the only one.
Yeah, so. You know, I didn't want to just do the same thing and turn up at the race again and get my ass kicked again. I kind of wanted to focus more on addressing the problems that I had rather than necessarily being desperate to do the race. And it's always fascinating to me every year to watch the people that get so desperate to qualify for the event that they absolutely bury themselves to do so. And then they go to the island and... what's the point in even going? Because they race shit. So one of those guys. For instance, someone like Anthony Costes last year, he was doing every single Ironman in Europe week after week to try and qualify, and he'd pull out every single week until he felt like this was the week I was going to qualify, and that just seemed so silly to me. So
stupid.
I was more keen to just kind of focus inward and fix, you know, whatever was going on so that I could have a better performance in Kona. So for me, really, it's perfect that it's delayed. I'm sad that it's obviously there's a global pandemic, but it kind of suits, what I had in mind for this year anyway. So, and you know what, in February 2021, it's actually going to play into the Southern Hemisphere's hands
for once in a lifetime. Exactly.
Yeah, so we can train for it at home and train for it in the summer, and everyone else is going to have to do their training camp away from home.
The Aussies and New Zealanders have done for years now. So, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But speaking about you, you are an athlete that loves to race. We know that. We've known that all along. You thrive on racing. I love watching you race. I think everyone loves watching you race. So as a racer, because, I mean, not all professional athletes are racers. You've got some pro athletes that just specifically pick maybe two or three races a year. For example, Jan Frodeno, and that's it. But you love to race. And so where does it leave you now, though, for this year, knowing that, okay, you were lucky, you were one of the lucky ones that got to race. You raced Geelong 70.3 way back at the beginning. Feels like way back in the beginning of the year, but it was only in February, I think. So you raced Geelong. But what about now? There's a good chance that there will be absolutely, a very, very good chance, there'll be absolutely no racing for you as a professional athlete for the remainder of 2020.
Yeah, you know, like I do, I am a racer. I do love to race and... it's hard to imagine for me having been racing literally my whole life from when I was 5 years old in the swimming pool. My mum started entering me in competitions. It's literally all I know. But to be honest, it's kind of nice to be able to take a deep breath and really, really unwind for once. And I've said this at various other times in the last couple months. We have such a busy schedule throughout the year, and you know, I could choose to be a Jan Frodeno that races three times a year, but realistically, if I choose to do that, I'm going to be a nobody because I'm not winning every single race I enter
I get it.
So you know, growing up as a young Aussie, you learn to race literally like 10, 11 months a year as much as you can, to try and put yourself out there, and it just, you burn out very quickly. And I always take 3 or 4 weeks off every year But to be honest, it never really seems like enough, because as soon as you start training again in December, late December, early January, summer here, you're motivated. You kind of end up entering races earlier than you'd imagine. And then, yeah, the season, it just escalates, and you've committed to all these events, and you're just racing like wall to wall all year round. And for me, it's kind of nice. I'm 31, it's the middle of my career, and to be honest, it's nice just to take a deep breath. And it hasn't been something I've really been concerned about when all these races have been cancelled. Like I was dying to race Challenge Roth this year, for instance. But you know, there's always next year.
Next year, exactly.
I'm still young, and I'm quite fortunate. I feel like I'm not one of the athletes at the end of my career. I was reading a WhatsApp article a couple of weeks ago about Sarah Pimpiano trying to decide whether she starts a family, or
she
hopes that there's going to be more races. And it's just, I can relax a bit because I'm fortunate. Ashley, we're not in that position,
in that situation yet. That's right. You know, you're dead right. And if anything, Josh, I mean, having the right attitude, like you obviously have, if anything, it's going to extend your career as a professional athlete. Let's be honest. Because I think having this time off for the first time, as you said, since 5 years of age, when racing has been your life, and obviously every time you line up to win, whether that happens or not is another thing, but you line up to give your best on any given day. So to have this time, it's what we call forced rest. To me, it's just going to prolong your career in the long run.
Yeah, I've thought that in the back of my mind as well. And you know, our training's changed quite a bit. When we're not trying to, you know, some I've noticed some athletes are, you know, they're trying to lay the base still, and it hasn't really been like that for us at all. We're kind of just having fun doing short, sharp sessions, trying to work on different aspects of our physiology that you don't necessarily need, you know, get to work on when you're training for long distance events. So yeah, we've been having fun and really short, hard rides and short runs and stuff, and it's just been everything is about it's been quite refreshing, to be honest.
Now that's interesting, because that was actually my last question, because a lot of athletes up here, and obviously I still dip my feet in the waters and do a little bit of training with some of the pro athletes up here on their easy sessions, and majority of them, and they're a lot older than you are, have just been working on maintaining a base, so nothing too specific, nothing too hard, but just making sure that they're laying the foundations for a good solid base, so that if a race should go ahead, they'd only need maybe a month to 6 weeks to actually then specifically target a few, you know, faster sessions or sessions with a few intervals involved to get to a race, into what we, you know, race shape. But you sound like you're not doing that specifically, that you are more just looking at doing things or working on weaknesses perhaps, or shorter, sharper sessions.
Yeah, the punchline would be I'm just trying to take as many Strava comps from cyclists as I can, literally.
So. Oh, that's unreal. As you should. It's perfect.
Yeah. So I've never really used Strava at all.
No. No.
And you won't find me on there because I use an alias, and I like to have fun with this alias. But if you know the Brisbane segments, you'd probably be smart enough to find out who I was. I've never used it, but I've found that it's just really been great motivation in this time to do these virtual kind of real lifey segments. And tomorrow I'm kind of eyeing off a 20K TT.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, so, but that's kind of the longest one I've done so far. I've just been doing like 5 or 10 minute climbs and little sprint sections and stuff. So yeah, just really having fun with my training, because when you're training for long distance events, everything is just so depleted. You've got no speed. You've kind of, you know, you're strong and stuff, but you're just always tired. So you're never really performing.
It's like you're running on empty the whole time.
So you're never really performing at your peak. So to be honest, like I'm riding around on my race wheels with my special tires on, and enjoying, literally just enjoying feeling really fast at the moment.
Oh, so, I love it.
And just going to places and to heart rates and like dimensions I've never been to before, because I'm always just too tired to push myself there. So, yeah.
It's exactly what you should be doing in this time. And that's what I say. I mean, you do what you need to do to maintain motivation and to get through this crazy time that we're going through now. Now, you did your very first virtual race last weekend, yes?
Yeah.
Yep. Now, so speaking about virtual races and Strava segments, etc., how was it? Did it live up to expectations, and was it what you expected it to be?
I didn't really have any expectations, to be honest, because I haven't exactly followed the virtual racing since it started. I love real racing. So
yeah, exactly.
when the virtual stuff started, when everything started to get cancelled in March, and I was going to line up for Challenge Shepparton in April, and that was one of the first ones to go in Australia. And from that point, I took like 2 or 3 weeks off, and I didn't do any training at all. And then that's, as you mentioned before, I turned my focus to landscaping, and that was, I had quite a bit of stuff to get through, and it was like real heavy labor. So
I saw some videos. I saw what you were making Ash do. It was intense.
Oh, Ash, she
little legend.
Can do nothing.
Give me a break.
So
I saw her missing some meat.
So I wasn't training at all. So when the Ironman virtual races started, I just wasn't on that wavelength at all. I wasn't thinking about who's lining up this weekend. It was just may as well have been like a whole other thing. I just wasn't worried about it. So, but by the time I kind of got motivated to start training again, and I'd wrapped up all the landscaping, I'd already started to take an interest in what was happening again, and I got asked to do the VR6. So it was it's Friday here. That was Monday morning for me, and it just came at a good time, and I was happy to do it. It was kind of unfortunate for the Oceania region that the time zone was way off, so we had to get up at 2:50 a.m. to do it, so race start was 4:00. We had to check in on the Skype at like 3:10. So, and I did this 2 mornings in a row. So Ash also got the call up for the women's events.
Oh, of course.
So they split the day start. So I was like a zombie for 2 days, and I rode really well, and it was the best 40k TT I've ever done. And if you read my race report, you'd probably understand the tone. But I still got beaten by 5 minutes.
It's insane. It's insane. I have read it, and I have seen the numbers.
Yeah.
And even my husband's still shaking his head in bewilderment.
Yeah. You take it for what it's worth. It wasn't necessarily a race.
No.
Because it's it's fair enough. They're not offering prize money for this stuff, because there's just no way anything can ever be validated. So
too many variables.
It was good, and I got out of it what I wanted, which was kind of like a bit of a wake up call and a hard 40k TT. And it's funny, you don't really ever put yourself in situations where you're going, okay, this week for training, I want to hit a 40k TT and see what I can do.
True.
It was nice to just do 40k TT and get some numbers so we can start working from here.
Yeah, good point. Now, the best thing for all of us, of course, though, Josh, was your little race report. You just spoke about it then. Your little race story that came to us all, thank God, on a Tuesday. I absolutely love your race report. I have even before this day, but that one, as I've said to you before, I was having a crappy day. I woke up to some crappy emails, work emails, and your race report, just a day that could have gone so badly, just you completely turned it. Writing is your forte, my young man. It really is. It really is. You are brilliant. Do you realize how good you are?
Oh, I mean, I publish them, so I know that they're good.
love it.
I like to do it because I make myself laugh more than anything, and I love that you really enjoy them and you feel great about them, because kind of like it takes me a while to do them. It's not something I can do in 30 minutes. Kind of like a half day thing, because there's a lot of editing. I've always got a lot of ideas, and that's the thing with me, is I don't often say a lot. I don't, with my social media, I don't often post a lot, but when I get ideas, I want to like talk about them and I want to post about them. So it all kind of comes in waves. And when I do those race reports, a lot of stuff comes out of my head, and it actually takes a lot of time to edit it into the format where you can actually publish it on Instagram, because there's a word length.
Yeah, of course. So
it takes a long time, and Ash the whole time hates it, because I'm literally may as well have like four walls around me and
nothing else matters.
Yeah, and so she gets no attention, and of course she's nervous as hell about what I'm going to write and if I'm going to piss anyone off, and if there's going to be any repercussions that reflect badly on her. So it's quite a stressful time, but I actually, before going to bed the night after the report, I let Ash read it before I published it, just to get her approval. I was going to publish it anyway, but
but you're doing the right thing, just in case. No, it's always good to have another set of eyes go over something before it goes out to the world anyway. So
I got a few laughs out of her, so I know if I can make
you knew it was good. Mm-hmm.
Maybe other people are going to laugh too, so yeah, well, I'll like to have fun with it.
You have an incredibly dry and a very witty sense of humour, and that's not easy to come by, let me tell you. The only other athlete that I recall being able to make me laugh as much as you do is Trevor Wirtel, and he's since retired. So we need you, and we need your stories.
Trevor was brilliant. Incredible what he did. So he did videos and cut amazing, like, bits of footage from movies and TV shows and samples from songs and everything, and what he did was incredible. I could never do that. I pretty much can just write words and
I will take it, Josh. It's still brilliant.
I definitely put myself in that category, and I actually remember one race I did with Trevor, and I got a mention in his race report, and I was pretty chuffed at the time. So I've had similar people say when they get mentioned in my race report, it was an honour.
So, yeah. Well, I think the main thing, Josh, is that your race reports just, they resonate with so many, because even though obviously you're very serious about your job, your profession as a professional athlete, you're also able to see the lighter side of it and have a bit of fun with it all. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about balance. Triathlon is a sport. Yes, it's your profession. I'm not trying to belittle that in any way. It was my profession for 20 odd years, but it's also a lifestyle, and one that we are so lucky to be able to partake in. So I think the reason that I love reading your race reports is because it just, as serious as you are, and you are and a brilliant athlete, you also understand that it's also, it can be fun and you love it. And like you said, you love to race. You love the sport, and I think that comes through each and every time you publish one of your race reports.
Yeah, thanks, Belinda. And, you know, like, I've been around professional athletes for a long time now, since I was 16 or 17, and a lot of them are funny. You know, a lot of people are trying to hide details from others and hide weaknesses, and, you know, a lot of competitors that I race now, let's say a lot of Europeans. Someone like Lionel Sanders is in the opposite end of the spectrum, because he shares like absolutely everything. But
exactly,
a lot of the other guys, they like to hide stuff, and they, you know, one German doesn't want the other German to know what he's racing and what he feels, and you know, they don't want to know what equipment they're all using. And I've seen them after races. You know, I've spent time with a lot of those guys, like Sebi and Frodo, and if things go wrong, it really affects them. To the point where it's like you don't really know if they actually enjoy the sport.
I agree, totally agree.
And as an Aussie, there's some, of course, there's dramatic Aussies. I'm not going to say that they're not drama queens, but I don't know. I think that we can just be a bit more relaxed here down under. And definitely, like what you said, we're incredibly lucky to do what we do, to have the opportunities to race. And I know it's not easy to put on races these days. So literally every time I race, I feel appreciative that we get to do what we do, considering the amount of work that goes into the events. And then, of course, like the sponsors we have that stand behind us to support us to do what we do. It's like I don't ever want to be in a situation where racing makes me feel bad or unhappy, happy with myself. It's just, I don't know, the race reports is, it's just an outlet for me to have fun. And, of course, show some appreciation to the competitors that go through the same stuff, because I like to talk about things that don't often get talked about, really. She kind of told me off last time that the Geelong report, I used a lot of toilet talk. In fact, half of it was probably talking about, standing in line for the portaloo and then what happened when I got inside. that's stuff that everyone goes through, but no one talks about.
Everyone, professional, age group, it doesn't matter. We all go through it. Everyone's been through it. Everyone has a toilet story at a race, let's be honest.
Yeah, so, I like to have fun with that and take the piss, so we should say.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. So I want it to keep coming. So make sure it does, because honestly, that's one of the things I look forward to. I don't read anyone's race reports, but Trevor Wirtel, Josh Amberger, two race reports that I will always go looking for. Now, listen, Josh, 2020, as we said, it's been a crazy year. I was very excited this year because I had what we call the big four in my head, the big four races, and they were going to be the Collins Cup at the championship in Slovakia in May, Challenge Roth, Ironman 70.3 Worlds in Taupo, and, of course, Ironman World Championships in Kona. All four of those races are now gone for this year. Recently, we just had announced, the PTO announced and Challenge Daytona announced that they were going to have the PTO championship race in early December as part of the Challenge Daytona weekend. Obviously, the top 40 PTO ranked athletes will be invited. Is this a race that you are looking at as actually happening and so you are focusing on it, or is it still just too damn difficult, particularly being here in Australia? Because I think that makes a difference, being here in Australia and New Zealand, where we know that international travel is going to be an absolute pain in the backside. But is it something that you are thinking, well, it's not till December, surely we will have our shit worked out by then, and maybe, just maybe, it's a race that you can focus on? I mean, it's a $1 million prize purse. I mean, that is enormous, huge for our sport. So as much as I am genuinely excited about this, and I actually want to get there, I'm just wondering, as a pro athlete living here in Australia, is it something that you can actually really wrap your head around?
Yeah, you know, like if there's a race on, I'll put in my own head, I'll put myself on the start line, particularly the big ones. You know, right when I pivoted from ITU racing to like non-drafting middle distance events was around the time when Hy-Vee was offering $1 million purse for an Olympic distance non-drafting event. And that was a race that
huge.
Changed my career. And I said, well, if they're going to offer this, I'm quitting ITU. I'm going to go for this.
Straight for that,
So, you know, you have to be kind of like a careerist and seek out the opportunity. So, if there's a massive purse on offer, I'm going to chase it. But it's not an event that I'm going to start to prepare for now, for instance. Yep. You know, we're in May. We've got the winter to get through. Yeah, I mean, we'll just see how the year unfolds. I'm fortunate that in my makeup, I don't really get stressed about things. I don't know, just things going by the wayside. I kind of just I like to see things unfold, and I'm not rigid at all. Like, I'm very malleable in how I approach day to day and my season and training. And so if it's on, I'll be there. If it's not, I hope that the PTO and Challenge Daytona can keep the momentum going for next year, because I think that will be the next big thing in triathlon, and it's all come in waves over the years. Through the last 10 years, we've had all the big races have come in waves, and it's definitely been, we've all been kind of waiting for the next big thing. So this is definitely going to be it with the PTO.
I agree.
Yeah, I really hope that despite the challenges we have now, that we can just keep the momentum and keep the partners on board. Because I think I've said this recently, where I don't think there's been no more exciting time to be a fan of triathlon or to be an athlete in the sport of triathlon than there is now. There's just like such a massive depth of talent across the men and women, and to have a platform like a race in Daytona, or it was going to be the Collins Cup that, to showcase that talent. I just hope that we can still see that if it doesn't happen this year. So
hopefully next year.
The other thing with me actually is I'm kind of in a diplomatic limbo where I don't have a US visa at the moment. I applied for it. My visa expired. I applied and the embassy got shut down. So,
okay. Yeah,
literally, right. Who knows with the US embassy trying to deal with that kind of level of diplomacy.
It could be a little tricky.
Yeah, it's always difficult as a non-US citizen traveling to the US, and I know it's almost like every time you go you might not actually you feel like you might not get in for one
might not make it I get it. I know,
yeah,
it's crazy. Look, I hope it happens too, and I think that's the last. It's the last chance. I mean, it's not till December, so it's. I think we're still holding on to hope that it will go ahead. If not, 2021 is looking like the most incredibly busy race year of any triathlete's life ever. Now, obviously, from midnight tonight in Queensland, we are moving into the next stage of reopening, so to speak. I know we've already spoken about pools and how it's not really a priority for you. I do know that you are a lover of coffee. I've always respected you a lot for that. Are you looking forward? Because I know the first thing I am going to do tomorrow, even though I've got great coffee here at home and a great coffee machine, the one thing I'm looking forward to the most tomorrow, Josh, is actually going to my favorite local coffee shop and having a coffee from a real bloody coffee cup and not a shitty takeaway cup. Is this something that you are actually, I know it sounds so silly, but is it something that you are actually looking forward to, having a coffee from a real coffee cup for the first time in months outside of your own home, of course?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to say, because we kind of pretty much got a coffee shop here.
Yeah, in your own place, exactly. We're the same here, I must admit, so I get it. But, I mean, it is lovely to go out and train and then stop off at your local and have a coffee.
Yeah, of course. You know, I love the coffee rides, and they've, you know, been defunct for some months now. So, it'll be amazing. And, you know, I've been missing meeting my friends at cafes and stuff. So it's obviously a big part of Australian culture is cafe culture. Yeah. We actually haven't done this in many, many years. We used to do it in about 2013, 2014. Me and Dan Wilson, who you'd know, and some listeners would probably know, and some other people, we used to get together in the CBD in Brisbane and you know, put the token in for the hire bikes, and we'd ride around the city to all the best coffee shops.
I love it. That's awesome.
And we'd literally finish the day with probably a dozen coffees under our belt, and it was always mayhem, but a lot of fun. And I think we haven't done that in a long time, but I definitely feel that there's going to be one soon.
One coming up soon.
Yeah, when we get a chance to do it.
Well, I know that the last time I heard of that ever happening was after Ironman Melbourne 1 year, Clint Kimmins and Luke McKenzie decided to do a coffee crawl the day after they'd finished the race. And I think they got through That was in, obviously, Melbourne. There's some fantastic coffee shops around St Kilda, Melbourne area. And I think they got through a few, but they were not healthy-looking campers by the time I saw them that afternoon, though. They were very much on edge.
Oh, yeah, that's the last thing you need after an Ironman is more caffeine.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Now, Josh, I don't want to keep you for too much longer, though. I could talk to you for hours. You're an absolute darling. What I love, one of the many things I love about both you and Ash is at the end of every season, you always go on your little camping adventure where you go, you always, so we could talk about getting off the grid. And I absolutely love it. You take your hotted up, the coolest looking Land Rover I know, and you and Ash go, usually north, I would say, from Brisbane, and you go off grid for a week or two where you go camping and fishing. And it looks, I mean, we don't get to see a lot because I know you go off social media, but it looks incredible. I'm hoping it still goes ahead this year. There may not be a race season before it to justify it, but are you still looking at taking a trip sometime at the end of this year?
Yeah, of course. One of the great things about what we do is we've got amazing national parks either direction of where we live in Brisbane, like right on our doorstep. So yeah, we like to drive the and I'm glad you called it a Land Rover and not a Jeep. So
oh, please.
Yeah.
And one thing my husband taught me, my husband loves his cars too. So he would slap me for that. So no, exactly.
Yeah. We literally drive out. I spend the day packing. Ash kind of, she might, I don't know, do a few things that she likes to do. I like to pack. She hates the packing, so I'll do that. And she'll probably go to the shops and buy all the groceries. And we drive the car 30 minutes to the port. We get on a boat for 90 minutes, and then we're at Moreton Island, which is just beautiful. East of Brisbane. So we also go to Fraser Island, which is just north of where you are in Noosa. Just amazing sand islands that are basically like pristine, untouched. There's, for those who don't know, there's no sealed roads on the islands, and you need a full drive to drive on there. And to me, it's just like the ultimate freedom. And it feels like I've been doing it since I was very young when my dad used to take me, but it kind of feels just like the quintessential Australian holiday to drive your car on the beach and pitch your tent on the sand dunes and catch fish for dinner and, you know, have a campfire and get sunburnt and all that cool stuff, you know, fight off mozzies at night. It's always something we love to do because you just refresh so much from it. There's no, you take your phone, of course, for, you know, pictures and that. We don't have anything else. So, there's no cell reception. There's no power. So there's quite a lot of planning involved in getting yourself ready for the trip. But it's just the funnest time. And no matter whether I feel like we've earned it or not,
through something racing, you're gonna do every year.
Yeah, we'll go because it's also a way to kind of appreciate what we have here in Australia with our unique environment. And like I touched on before about kind of just appreciating what's around me.
But it costs nothing.
Yeah, literally.
It's the greatest thing.
$6 a night to camp to Queensland Parks and Wildlife. So
amazing.
We started doing it because, of course, after our long season of travel, we wanted to take a holiday, but we didn't actually want to travel.
No, because you do it all year. You don't want to see another aeroplane.
So it just literally seemed like a no-brainer. And for me, it was initially about showing Ash this kind of experience because she didn't grow up doing that with her family.
Yeah.
So once Ash, she did her first trip and she was sold.
Unreal.
At that time, so.
Well, I love it. It resonates with me, Josh, because I was brought up, my family took me camping. That was what we did. We didn't go overseas as kids. We went camping. And I'm from Wollongong originally, so down on the south coast of Sydney. And we used to go down to Jervis Bay nearly every second weekend. So I was brought up camping and I absolutely love it. So I sort of, when you go on your trips and then you post a few pictures when you get back, I live through those pictures because it just reminds me of my childhood. And you're dead right, there is nothing better. It's just the most amazing experience. And I think because, you know, international travel might not be around for some time, I think you'll find that there'll be quite a few people that go back to the basics and go back to camping and doing it. Oh, well, I call it roughing it, but it's, you know, it's not really to those types of trips. Cause I mean that they're awesome. They're awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Unreal. Now that brings me to my very last question. I wasn't going to ask this because it seems so, I don't know. It's not really a question that I would normally ask, but you talked about how you and Ash have been together for 10 years now. You finally proposed, even though it took you a year to do that from when you asked for her hand in marriage. What about the wedding? Are we going to wait another 10 years or? I mean, and you know, we talk about Sarah Piompiano and talking about how she's had to really think long and hard because she wants to plan a family. She's at an age where she wants to start having children, but now that Kona's not till next year, it's a whole nother year away. Same with you guys. You're still young. Ash has got the Olympics to concentrate on next year. When are you going to fit in a wedding? Next year sounds like it's going to be absolute madness as far as racing goes. Were you planning on getting married next year, or is that something that's a couple of years away or a few years off yet?
You know, we want to kind of course, we want to, we'd rather get married sooner rather than later, but that sooner kind of always fell in a time frame of within maybe like 18 months to sort of 20 months, which kind of landed in a spot like November next year, probably after, you know, the Noosa Tries and all that stuff is done.
Perfect. Yeah,
when
perfect.
We can both enjoy a holiday together and when we know that our other friends who are triathletes can also come to the wedding. And,
you
know, all our international friends can hopefully come sort of around a time that's friendly for everyone. So, you know, we've obviously got a chance to still do that, hopefully.
Absolutely.
And it was always, we didn't want to plan a wedding before Ash had to race in Olympic Games or anything. So
of course not.
So it still lines up with that. And, yeah, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, let me tell you, Joshy, I got married in November. It's a good month to get married.
Yeah,
I think Justin and I are coming up 20 years now, so it's a month. It's a good month.
Yeah, but to answer your question, I think that it's nice that the wedding will happen sooner than what the engagement did because Ash is there to help me with it. So
exactly. Okay. So you've got a helping hand. Yeah, she can do all the hard stuff.
Yeah, I'll just go, yeah, that looks great. And
you'll just do what you're told. That's what will happen. And you just need to turn up on time, so you'll be fine.
Exactly.
Listen, Josh, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. You're an absolute darling. You're wise beyond your years, I can tell you that, which is so refreshing. I mean, you might only be 31, but you've got the mentality of a person way that's lived life a lot longer than that. So absolute pleasure talking to you. So thanks,
Linda. I'm starting to get some wrinkles now. So,
sweetheart, don't talk about wrinkles. Just come up here. I'll show you wrinkles.
You still look gorgeous.
You're saying all the right things. I love you already. Well, listen, give that gorgeous fiance of yours, Ash, a big kiss from me. She's just an absolute darling. I adored her from the first time I met her, and I cannot wait to see you at the next race, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Fantastic. Thanks, Belinda.
Thanks, darling.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.